Smoking Joe Patrick every single Thursday at this time, our Falcons insider for 92.9 The Game. Joe, how are you?
I'm good, Andy, and I couldn't help but think about Michael Scott when you're talking about a golf country club. It's like the inside his joke about inside jokes. It's like, you know, I love golf country clubs. I'd love to be a part of one someday.
Yeah, exactly right. I love, one of my favorite things is to visit, and then they politely ask me to leave every single time. It's been fun. It's been fun.
Yeah, sir, what's your membership number?
Yeah, you should come back in a year, maybe, or whatever. Maybe not. Maybe never. Maybe never. All right, let's talk about Sunday, last Sunday first, and just sort of what an unusual performance, certainly by this year's standards, it was for the Falcons. Raheem has said flat a number of times. He said it again yesterday. I totally agree. Some of the players said that they don't feel like that, but that's what it looked like to me. Can you explain, or do you have a theory as to why they may have looked like that?
Yeah, I would also say I thought it was flat. I think, though, that, you know, I'm never one to really criticize a player's effort unless it's completely obvious, because these guys, you just never know what individual guys are dealing with injury-wise, especially in a sport like football. But to me, what was the flatness in that game was kind of two parts. But I thought from the players, it was like a mental flatness. I think that was kind of what was most evident, especially when you saw the offense take the field on that opening drive and, what was there, three false starts on that opening drive? Like, that to me just tells you that you're not kind of, you know, alert and ready to play. And then we saw, you know, some miscommunications or just guys. Yeah, we were actually just talking to Justin Simmons, who he took full responsibility for the touchdown that happened at the end of the first half that really, in my opinion, changed the whole tenor of the game and the way that the second half unfolded. And, you know, he just said it was, you know, like, we can't, like, assume things. We have to constantly be alert, be communicative when we're out there about what we're seeing from the opposition. And then, you know, you just can't assume that because it's maybe a play or, you know, a presentation that you saw in kind of like opening day installs, you can't just assume that you know exactly what your teammate's doing and vice versa. So you just always have to be on your toes in that respect. And I just thought that that's the main area where the Falcons were lacking. Because when you go back and watch the tape, I mean, like the offense really did ultimately, you know, move the ball relatively decently, just obviously wasn't able to punch it in the end zone and really make the crucial plays when they had to. And then the second half you had turnovers. So there's just, you know, I honestly think it can be one of those moments that ultimately proves to be a positive for a team in the long run, where you just kind of have one of these kind of you stumble and scuff your knee up, but then you get up and keep running. Or, you know, it can happen that, you know, it can be what is the first of many kind of blows that a team takes that they can't overcome, which we've seen, I think, especially last season where that really happened to this team. So I think these next few weeks are going to be really interesting to see how they're able to get over that performance. And, you know, what a better test than a division opponent that really would allow you to take control of things in the NFC South.
Joe, I think there's a couple ways to ask this question. I'm not really sure which way I'm going to go with. I'm just going to walk into it.
Do it the mean way.
Well, it's not about that. Look, you're coming off of three NFC South games that were relatively emotional, relatively intense. And I wonder how much maybe those three games leading into Seattle kind of, and I'm not looking to give the guys an excuse, but kind of played a factor in them coming out flat. But on the flip side, you come out of that game with Seattle, and now you've got to ramp it back up to that level, and I think maybe that will actually help them return to form. How do you view playing three straight NFC South games, and then maybe is it beneficial that you have another one now that you really have to dial it in and focus on because the importance is so much more ramped up?
Well, I think you're spot on, Abe. I think that really did contribute to, you know, the lack of energy that we saw from the Falcons team. And again, actually, I'll just come out and say it, and I hate to do this. It's like the last thing I ever want to do.
Do it.
But the fan, like, the it was just not
blame
allowed.
The fans, Joe.
It was not a loud, intimidating environment
there
on Sunday. I'm sorry. I got to say it. Like, the loudest it ever got was, like, from someone dancing during a TV timeout. You know, and I just say that as someone who has been there for every game this year and has seen the stadium be absolutely roaring, you know, rolling and rocking, you know, for some of these division games, especially the primetime games. It's been absolutely crazy in there at moments, especially at the end of that Buccaneers game with that epic comeback. And it just wasn't like that. And I think part of that is natural. Like, it's a 1 o'clock game on a Sunday. You had a late Georgia game the night before. Who knows if that's impacting things, but it just wasn't the same environment. And, you know, I get it. Like, the team also has to give the fans something to cheer about. But, you know, this was a team that was coming off of a three-game winning streak, and it just all unraveled. It's not to lay all the blame there or anything. It's just, you know, it's just how the day went. And I think you're right, Abe, that, you know, just kind of getting back into that competitive, you know, division feeling of this is a moment for us to really grab hold of really take the reins of the rest of our season. Like, if this team wins this Sunday against the Buccaneers, they basically have the tiebreaker over the only other team that's competing in the division right now, the way the Saints are going after their hot start. And you really, you know, it leaves you with really needing to win five games the rest of the way. If you get the 5-3 through the first eight games, really, you just kind of need to go 5-4 the rest of the way, finish at 10-7, and you're almost guaranteed to finish above the Bucs, especially with the injuries that they're now facing to their wide receiver core that's going to substantially change that team. So I think for that reason, you know, it's probably the most important game of the season to date so far for the Falcons for that reason.
Smoking Joe Patrick joining us here on the Midday Show with Andy and Randy talking Falcons as we do every Thursday at this time. Let's look. I think I asked you this a couple weeks ago, but now we're closer to it and we're starting to see more trades happening, certainly at the wide receiver position. Is that something that you think the Falcons would really try to do? I mean, they went out in training camp and made a signing in Justin Simmons and made a trade to get Matthew Judon when not a lot of us were actually talking about that. Do you think that they would address their pass rush via trade before November 5th?
Man, it's so tough. It's so tough because it's obviously, like, you need help there. You need help in generating the pass rush. That is not a debate. Right. I think the debate is whether you will be willing to give up yet another draft pick, at least one from next year's contingent that you only have five left. You've already given up a third for a guy that you traded for at that exact position that you thought was going to help and that has not really helped thus far in Matthew Judon. And you know, lost the fifth rounder because of the sanctions that came down from the league based on the tampering allegations from last year. So, or from the previous draft. So, or whatever it was, the free agent signing. So you're already shorthanded in that respect. And it's a matter of, you know, can you give up more? Are you willing to give up like a first or second round pick when you know you have additional needs coming down the road with, you know, you're going to need a right tackle at some point soon to prepare for when the Michael Penix era starts and to protect his blind side. You've got, you know, there's edge rushers you could take in the draft, but if you're giving up, you know, a top pick, maybe some of those are off the table. I'm hesitant to say that I would, actually, if you're just asking my personal opinion, if I'm kind of playing the armchair general manager of this team. Because, and the other thing is that you have players on this team who I think have shown some flashes, but they're just not getting reps. And I'm thinking about guys like Zach Harrison. Arnold Ebikadi, I think, has actually looked pretty good from what I've noticed this year, but he's just not getting into the game except for some of these obvious pass rush situations. Maybe you can use him more, and that will kind of help spark some things for you. And who knows, maybe if Arnold Ebikadi gets going, he draws more attention to his side, and then, you know, with Matthew Judon on the other side, he can, you know, start having more success. I think that's the way I would try to, you know, improve this unit or this aspect of the team versus trying to just go out and bring a body, a quality player in, no doubt. But, you know, I just think that it's the more pragmatic way to go about it. And then the other thing is, you know, where there's so much focus on the edge position because that is where they need the help. But you also wonder, like, well, what if they got another linebacker and then were able to use Caden Ellis more as like a pure edge rusher where he had a lot of success in New Orleans, or even an interior defensive lineman, even though the team already has plenty of those. But all I'm saying is maybe there's other players as well that could, that you could add to the team that might not be as big of a lift in terms of what you would need to give up to get a player like that, that could actually improve the performance in some of these areas that have been lacking.
Joe, when you look at the Buccaneers offense without Evans and Godwin, what maybe changes for them? And then on the flip side, how are the Falcons prepared to deal with maybe a different looking offense from what we saw a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, I just asked Justin Simmons that. And of course, you don't really get an answer. They're not going to like tell you exactly what they're seeing on tape or whatnot, or what they're expecting from a strategic reason. But, you know, I would have to say that, I would expect that this Tampa Bay offense to kind of return to more of an extreme of what they were last year under Dave Canales, which is like running a lot of this quick game stuff. If you look at their skill positions, I mean, they've got some fast players still in that wide receiver core, especially a guy like Trey Palmer, who can create some explosives for you. And then they've got these three running backs, and I would expect them to try to utilize as many of those backs as possible that they've had success with. And, you know, especially a guy like Rashad White is a great receiver out of the backfield. So I would expect them to try to get a lot of motions involved, try to get the Falcons feeling flat-footed. And then also I think they're just kind of trying to make this as sloppy and ugly of a game as possible. I think if you're the Buccaneers, you got to come to terms with the fact that you're not going to go out there and score 30 points most likely. So how do we win without doing that? And that's going to be, you know, trying to control the clock as much as we can, you know, utilize the ground game, try to establish ourselves in that respect. And I think for that reason, the Falcons have to be ready for, after what was a shootout against this team at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, I think they got to kind of get themselves ready to really play a physical style of football against this Buccaneers team. I think that's the mentality that they'll have.
We don't have long, Joe, but hopefully it's not a long answer. Where are the Falcons at health-wise?
I think they're pretty solid, honestly. They are hoping to get Troy Andersen back this week. I saw him doing some like straight line sprinting yesterday. But I think that the best news for this team is that Matthew Bergeron was a full participant in practice yesterday after being knocked out with a neck injury, which is like potentially a catastrophic situation for a player. So great to see him back. The one thing that cropped up yesterday, and as soon as I get off this phone call, I'm going to be going out to look at practice to see if Ryan Neuzel's out there, because he missed practice yesterday. They're already down Drew Dahlman, who's on IR. So if he can't play, they would be going to their third string center in Matt Hennessy, who they just signed, who's been with the team prior. That's the big one we'll be watching out for this week, I think.
When you find out that information, will you tweet it?
I will absolutely tweet who's out of practice today.
All right, good. So we'll stop.
Just for you, Andy.
We'll stop distracting you from your job. Joe, thank you.
All right, thanks, guys.
Smoking Joe Patrick there, 92.9 The Game Falcons reporter. He's about to walk out on the practice field right now and tell you who's out there. Only way to know what he's going to tell you is follow him on Twitter, @JAPatrick200.